All right, so we are just a couple of days away from Pesach and Seder night and all that jazz. So, and therefore, since Pesach lands on Shabbos, we don't read the Parsha of the week. And we don't read the Parsha of the week. We don't read the Parsha of the week this Shabbos nor next Shabbos because it's both going to be on the first day of Pesach and on the eighth day of Pesach. So, might as well do some stuff about in the Haggadah. And the title of this class is called The Velvet Rope versus All Who Are Hungry Come and Eat. And we will start, obviously, with a video. Here we go. This is a famous Seinfeld clip, and I will talk about it afterwards. Basically, well, it'll be self-evident. Here we go. Okay, so let's go
there. There needs to be a minimum length of the videos.
Minimum should be 16 seconds, all you need. That's it. So so that was the scene was basically, whoa, Newman was having a movie, was having a birthday party with all of his fellow post office friends. And Kramer found out about it, and he wasn't invited. He was very upset, so he comes and crashes the party. He feels betrayed. Okay, so I'll start off with the easy questions. We'll warm up. All right, why wasn't Kramer invited to Newman's birthday party?
I mean, it's not self-evident in the video, but I guess the simplest guess is that he didn't want him there.
That's it. Right, he doesn't view him as one of his friends. One of his close friends, and therefore, he wants to maintain the exclusive nature of his party. Those are people he cares about the most, and he didn't make the cut. All right, simple. Number two, why did Kramer feel bad and need to rebuke Newman?
Because Kramer felt slighted and he was under the impression that he was a close friend of Newman's.
Right. So, So that's, in other words, he viewed himself as being a person who had the social standing of friend of Newman. And lo and behold, it was revealed that he was not friend of Newman. And he was upset about that. And he actually, and being that in the character in the series, Kramer does not have full social skills. That's part of his humor. He went to the guy's party and gave him rebuke of why he didn't get invited to the party, which nobody would ever do. But that's part of the whole thing. All right, now we're building up here. Question number three: why does every recognition of people have a dinner associated with it? For example, a wedding, reunions, an annual gala, like the MG dinner. What did I say, Shay? What do you say, Shayna? Suzanne?
It makes it more formal, or it brings the level up.
Why does it bring the level up?
Because instead of just having a gathering of people hanging around, it's nicer to have a proper meal and to sit down, break bread with friends, usually at a dinner and things like this. Maybe there's like some wine or spirits involved as well. And it just goes, instead of being just hanging around, it's more formal or fancier.
So why is it, but specifically we're talking about, I'm not asking why people have parties. I'm asking why people have, when you have a recognition of people, it's always with dinner. So you're saying it just makes it more formal. So what does that deliver?
It's a higher status.
Okay, so higher status. Otherwise, what does higher status mean, in other words?
No, Well, in terms of recognition of people, it gives them a place to sit. They eat while the recognition is going on sometimes, so that they can actually focus on what's being celebrated.
Right. So it's very simple. It's a greater kavod. It's a greater honor. In other words, the dinner becomes a delivery system of the honor. So let's take it like this. We have the we have a wedding, couples getting married. It, as you said, it gives it by having a formal dinner associated with it. It gives the recognition of the significance of the life event, life cycle event of this couple, much more gravitas, much more significance. Now, in halacha, if a couple got married and they did not have a dinner with it, they'd still be married. You know what I'm saying? It's a halacha to have a suda shal mitzvah, a suda with it. You know what I'm saying? Have a nice big meal. Because it has significance and gravitas to the event. Let's think about a reunion. Let's say a high school reunion. So why do they have a dinner associated with it? That's for a slightly different reason.
Fundraising.
No, they're talking about like a high school reunion.
Oh, a high school reunion. Oh.
What do you say, Suzanne?
I feel like you're catering to these people, so you're giving them something in return for their presence.
Correct.
Food.
You know, many people don't necessarily want to come to a high school reunion. So therefore, you're giving them a party. You're giving them the enjoyment factor by having great wine and great beverages. It's not so much about honoring. They might honor maybe a teacher there. They might do a little bit of that, but it's primarily the joy of socializing, partying. Then you have the annual gala, like the MG dinner, where we have basically a blending of both. You show significance to the honorees, but you have a significant amount of time where it's basically people have a chance to hang out and party. So putting in a halachic terminology, you get the kavod and oneg, just like Shabbos, or kavod and simcha. All right, so it's a delivery system. A dinner is a delivery system of either kavod or simcha or a blend of both. Is that clear? All right. Question number four. Who do we invite to exclusive parties and special meals?
The people that we're closest with that we want to share the party and the meal with.
So who are that? Who's going to be on that short list?
A closest friends and family.
Closest friends and family, as well as, or closest clients.
Closest clients and VIPs.
VIPs, right. Either significant people in our lives economically, or significant people in our lives emotionally, right? That's basically the whole list. All right. Now, why is dinner with the in-laws such a classic topic of comedy?
Well, you're bringing people together who may never ordinarily be together, and they may be very different, come from very different backgrounds, and when you mesh those two, it tends to be a little comedic and maybe a little tragic.
Right. So what's the challenge of in-laws in general? Let's define this. What's the problem with an in-law in general?
They're VIPs, but they're not closest to you?
Right, no, these are people who are becoming like second kind of parents, but you didn't grow up with them. And you're like awkwardly joined to them as an adult. They were your husband or wife's parents, but that's not your parents. And it's awkward. And you have to suddenly instantaneously gel. Like, you know, what's like one of the biggest lies that people say at dinners? We did not lose a son, we gained a daughter. We did not lose a daughter, we gained a son. All right? I mean, it's a nice sentiment, but what, you can't, there's no relationship. It's, you know, there's no intrinsic, that relationship is going to take some time to grow. You can't have an instantaneous, tight familial relationship, you know, in like a month. Doesn't work that way. So you have to awkwardly act as if you're super tight. In reality, there's no social capital in that account yet. You know what I'm saying? And they're very, you know, and it's like, you know, there's a little tension because one person's, you know, the son-in-law or daughter-in-law is not a natural fit into this family unit. You know what I'm saying? So that's a source of, and the son or daughter-in-law is trying to impress the typically more elderly couple, and of course, it doesn't always work out. It can, but that's why it's a source of comedy. All right, now, more importantly, question number six. Who do we tend to exclude from these parties?
People whose company we don't enjoy.
Okay. So who's going to include in that?
People we don't like, people we find rude and annoying, people who may have bad table manners.
Right. People who cannot, number one, help us economically. In other words, they're not our clients. People that we don't enjoy being with, or we don't have any social obligation. And we don't enjoy being with, have a social obligation to be with, or economic relation to be with. Everybody else who's not in that category is not in the party. Is that a fair description?
Yes.
I mean, depending on the dinner, I guess it would be also people who don't share the same perspective.
Well, people you don't like.
Okay.
You tend to hang out with people that share your same views. All right. Now, here we come. So what is the halacha for yontif? So let's take a look here. Let's have somebody. All right. Shana, read this.
From the Rambam, laws of resting on the holidays. When a person eats and drinks in celebration of a holiday, he is obligated to feed converts, orphans, widows, and others who are destitute and poor. In contrast, a person who locks the gates of his courtyard and eats and drinks with his children and his wife without feeding the poor and the embittered is not indulging in rejoicing associated with a mitzvah, but rather the rejoicing of his gut. And with regard to such a person, the verse Hosea is applied. Their sacrifices will be like the bread of mourners. All that partake thereof shall become impure, for they kept their bread for themselves alone. This happiness is a disgrace for them. As implied by Malachi, I will spread dung on your faces, the dung of your festival celebrations.
Okay, so the Rambam shares, there's a mitzvah, v'samata b'chagecha, you should rejoice in the holidays. But part of that rejoicing, of course, you have to be happy, and your wife has to be, your family has to be happy, wife and kids. But that's not all. You have to make happy and include in the simcha those people who don't have. And if you purposely, knowingly reject, exclude them, you're not involved in simchas yontif. That's not a simcha. That's a selfish simcha. It's a simcha of the gut, says the Rambam. The Hebrew is simchas kreso, the rejoicing of the belly. Okay? So, you know, the person's got to have an open door policy. And not only that, but try to think about people who don't have a place and include them. They don't have to be necessarily an orphan. The Ram is speaking about the people who are likely not to have the infrastructure and be able to have a place for the yontif meals. Why is there an obligation on yontif versus not every day?
Wait, what?
Why is this an obligation, particularly on Yom Tov, versus, let's say, on a Tuesday? Why shouldn't you, if you have a meal, there were great chachamim that would, every time they had a meal, they would invite the poor to their table. They never, in fact, the highest level is that the guy wouldn't have a meal which he did not share with the poor. So this is the only obligation on the yontif. What is it about the yontif?
It's a community. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, Mendel, after you.
My impression is that this is a community celebration. This is not just an individual meal. This is a community. This is specifically a community activity.
It's not just community. It's a national activity.
Right, right.
That the entire Jewish people are rejoicing. So you can't have 25% or 20% or 10%, whatever the number is, of 5% being locked out. You know, the phrase that I use, anybody know what the phrase, the velvet rope? What is a velvet rope? Where do you see in our day and age a velvet rope?
You see them at clubs, at movie premieres. It's for the A-list to get in and hold everybody else out.
Right. So the velvet rope, exactly, is allowed that the people who are let in are the VIPs, who are on the exclusive guest list. And those people, and then everybody else are being blocked out by the what they call the velvet rope. Okay? We don't, you know, it comes to Yontif, just the opposite. You have to include everybody who doesn't have, or at the very least, don't let them, you know, keep the door open and allow them in. You know what I'm saying? And he says, this, the Rambam says, this simcha is a disgrace. So it's a completely counterintuitive experience. Now, we're going to go back to the, now, you're going to open up this Friday night. You're going to make Kiddush, Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. Step five of the Seder is Magid, telling over the story. The first thing you say is as follows. All right, Suzanne, read us the first little paragraph, first three sentences to read.
This is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever is in need, let him come and conduct the Seder of Passover. This year we are here, next year in the land of Israel. This year we are slaves, next year we will be free people.
Okay. Question number one. Suzanne, read it.
This text, Halachma Anya, this is the bread of affliction, is written in Aramaic, the language of the Babylonian exile. Why is it not in Hebrew like the rest of our Haggadah?
This is something you can add to your. This is something you can add to your Seder. You can challenge people. Oh, so why is this in Aramaic? All right. What do you guys say?
Aramaic was the everyday spoken language back then. So it's in Aramaic because it's a language that everyone can understand, not everyone understood Hebrew.
Okay. But yet the rest of the Haggadah is in Hebrew. It's the only thing which is in Aramaic. So why is it in there at all? Or why was it not translated?
Because we're inviting in everybody. Anyone who might need a meal, who can't have a meal, and those people, it's you know, carried on. It's the tradition that's carried on over and over that those people most likely, if they are not able to afford a meal, wouldn't know any Hebrew. So to say to welcome them in Hebrew, they wouldn't understand the welcome.
Okay, that's good. So you can say just practically to ensure that those people who are not well versed in Hebrew could, you know, be able to understand. Also, a point to the thing is that this means this came later. This was inserted in the Haggadah at a later point. The structure of the Seder already is written down in Hebrew in the Mishnah. So this already is here in Aramaic, which to me seems like it sounds like a little later. Now, well, we're going to go back to this question. I'm going to leave the question out. Now, This is also one of the obvious questions on this whole unit. All right, Mendel, read it out.
Number two?
Yep.
Why are we inviting people after the meal has begun? Isn't that a little late?
Typically, for a Seder, you want to invite people like a week in advance, or 5 days in advance, not 4 steps into your Seder. You've made Kiddush. You've washed your hands, you've taken the karpas, you start in the market, then you say, oh, this is the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Egypt. All who are coming, who are hungry, come and eat. Isn't that a little bit, doesn't that strike you a little bit of a non-sincere invitation?
It's 2 different invitations.
Okay.
One is, you know, the prior thing is to sort of get yourself organized. Not that if somebody knocks on your door at this inconvenient time specifically that you should shoo him away on the opposite. You should invite him in. But this is more of an entree into what this meal is actually about and is, I'd imagine, meant to also engender question and dialogue.
So 1 second. Is this an invitation or is it not an invitation?
It is not. I would not say, I don't think it's an invitation.
Right. So you're saying, so is
it something else? Huh?
Are we lying? Are we being sincere? What's going on here?
We're trying to start a conversation. Is what I think.
So you're saying it's part of, you're saying it's a bizarre thing that we do to us, to cause people to question. Like, we don't normally invite people to the meal once the meal has already started.
Right, but we're not actually inviting people to the meal. We're saying this is the bread of affliction.
Yes. Whoever is hungry, let them come and eat. Whoever's in need, let them come and conduct a Pesach Seder or join us in the Seder. So it sounds like it's an invitation, but it's kind of weird that you've already begun the meal, the Seder. All right, we'll have to get back to that one too. So this might, we need to bring Newman back into the episode here. All right, Suzanne, read us question number 3.
Who might Newman invite if he read Halachma Anya? This is the bread of affliction at his Seder party.
Who may have invited? What if Newman read that?
Well, Kramer popped in.
Okay.
So it almost seems like, well, but he wasn't thrilled that he was there.
No, he was not thrilled. He resented it. He just had to make a joke. Oh, I got lost in the mail because he's a postman. So he made it, But if you read this phrase, this is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate in Egypt, whoever's going to come and eat, what might it cause them to think about and actually do?
What Kramer was in need. Well, kind of.
Well, let's say, because Kramer, it seems from the Seinfeld that they all live in the same apartment building. So he may have sent somebody up and said, look, maybe check if Kramer has a Seder.
Right.
Somebody go up there, make sure that he has something going on.
So, I mean, I'm not sure how realistic that is. I mean, considering what we know about any of them, it's hard for me to imagine that any of them would be in any position of reading Halach Ma'anya.
No, I understand that. I'm just, we're using that the whole appeal of Seinfeld is you have people who are, you have 4 highly selfish people who navigate, life's challenges in the most selfish way possible, which is a source of comedy. But they're disgusting. But as people, they're so self-indulgent, they're disgraceful. Some people can't watch because it's so self-absorbed, but they're funny while they're funny in their self-indulgent and selfish way. You know what I'm saying? That's the appeal of the thing. Their small-minded, selfish, self-indulgent way, it has a lot of humor written in there. Now, but assuming that, imagine if Newman thought about, left the character of full-on Newman, what might motivate him and to think about? That the nature of this meal as being a blueprint for all holiday meals, but certainly the Super Bowl party, Super Bowl, the meal of meals of the entire year, the exalted evening, is that to knowingly have people who are outside who don't have a place is wrong. So this will function as a reminder, in advance of the meal, in other words, people who are not well versed in Judaism know this idea. You know what I'm saying? Whoever's hungry, come and eat. It's from the first, because it's the opening line of the storytelling section. So really, it's not simply. So on one hand, it could be a rhetorically, not really an invitation, as Mendel is saying, but giving you, not as a way to ask questions, but really identifying the character of the meal. It's a meal that should include both family and friends and those who don't have. You know what I'm saying? And then I think people, that has sort of like sunk in a little bit. You know what I'm saying? A. And B, if somebody has forgotten somebody, to make a last minute remedy of it. You know what I'm saying? Practically. Okay? Which you can really, for example, in New York, this happens at MG all the time. Rabbi Ezra Cohen has been running the first night Seder for MJE in Midtown. He's had people come the night of. And he found some space. You know what I'm saying? So not that we want people not, because you also want to be able to properly welcome them in. You know what I'm saying? But it happens, in MJE land, this is not a rhetorical invitation. This actually happens probably every single time. People who, come and they don't want to, because they forgot about the Pesach Seder or they weren't really focused on it, and then they show up last second and, a place around the table is found. Okay, so this is a key point. Question number four. Both Newman and Kramer are assimilated New York Jews, played in the sitcom. So why are they acting in a Gentile fashion of being exclusionary, of making sure that people are not included? The Torah's motif is to be inclusive. Why are they so exclusive?
Because they're like other people in New York, like that they see, that they act like.
Exactly. Related. Because that idea of whether it be a wedding meal or a yontif meal, including the people who don't have, is completely foreign. Because we said before, the purpose of a meal is a vehicle for either A, to deliver honor, or to deliver fun, entertainment. Having people who are not part of your group, who are poor or not, who don't have, are they going to add to the honor factor or reduce the honor factor?
Reduce it.
They're going to reduce it. So that's why. So Halach Ma'anya basically is written in Aramaic because, for us who are fundamentally still part of the Babylonian exile, who are fundamentally assimilated Jews in various degrees, need to be reminded about what really is a proper meal all about. You know what I'm saying? Because our natural tendency is not to ensure that everybody's taken care of. You know what I'm saying? It's something that we need to be refreshed upon. You know what I'm saying? We need that reminder. because it's not natural to us, because we are a minority in a host society, which doesn't view that a holiday dinner should be a meal of chesed. It's only for kavod, honor, and simcha of my of those people who I care about. Here, the Torah is broadening our horizons that we have to care about people who also don't have. So, what type of guests do we seek more of in general, based upon the principle that we've already worked out?
Those who affirm and echo our own understanding and affirm and echo our greatness.
Well, either affirm or facilitate, you know, moving us up the social ladder.
Okay.
Let me give you a simple example. What would people's reaction would be if at the MG dinner, Beyonce and Jay-Z came to the MG dinner? What would people's reaction be?
They'd be members for life.
No, I mean, it would be amazing, because that would be, because here is an internationally known 2 megawatt A-list celebrities coming to our event. That makes our event to be like a small parochial event, although we enjoy it in our community, and make it like an international level event. You know, it's a worthy of having like a red carpet part to our event. You know what I'm saying? It would elevate it like crazy. Conversely, what guests do we avoid naturally?
Those of ill repute who would denigrate the event with their presence.
Right, people who would diminish our status, diminish our honor, and diminish our fun. Right, I mean, that's clear? So now we go full circle. How does Aram view an honorable and joyous Yom Tov meal? Going back to the Rambam over here.
By opening our doors to people who are unable to do for themselves.
Right. Those are not do for themselves. It doesn't have to be people who, it's not limited to people who are poor, they don't have food. There's another category. They have food. It's not that they're going to, if they don't come to this guy's Yontif meal, they're not going to have food for Yontif. There's another dimension of a Yontif meal. Very important.
You're saying you invite the ones that even are super annoying and not pleasant to be around?
Well, they don't have to be that. It's not like a myth, it's not a mitzvah. In other words, it's people who are like a widow.
Okay, that's my
She could be a wealthy woman, but what is she?
She's alone.
Right.
She's lonely. No, so she could be eating in her house the finest foods. That's not simple yontif. You can't be samach by yourself. You know what I'm saying? Simcha really, in general, the simcha experience, a national simcha can't be done by yourself alone. It has to be national. It has to be with groups of people. So you're providing them company, a sense of belonging, a sense of being a community. Very important. It's not simply. So it's 2 dimensions, people that don't have the food, and even people that do have the food don't have a community there. They feel marginalized. They feel left out. So
does that apply to Shabbat also? Like you shouldn't have a Shabbat meal alone also?
This is only because it's going back to our definition. Well, that's a great question, Sean. Let me ask the other students. What do you guys say? Well, this halacha of if you would shut out the people, the poor, the widows, the orphans, the destitute, the poor, the embittered, on Shabbos would not be a mitzvah, but it would be a rejoicing of the gut. Is that applicable by Shabbos, halachically at least? What do you guys say? And this requires information we've heard, we've discussed about in previous classes. My hint.
Isn't the mitzvah for having guests on Shabbos from Avraham and his visitors?
Well, he didn't have it on specifically on Shabbos. He's doing hachnasas orchim. Hachnasas orchim means people that need food and shelter. Not so much having guests on Shabbos, but or if you invite your next door neighbor for a Shabbos lunch, that's a mitzvah of loving your fellow Jew as yourself. In other words, creating a sense of social connectivity, right? Hachnasas orchim is a person, let's say people coming into Great Neck from Woodmere for a simcha, and they got no place to stay. They can't walk on Shabbos from Woodmere to Great Neck. Right. So if you invite them into your home, you're providing them, you know, hospitality that they can't on their own provide.
Got it.
But on Shabbos, is there an idea of what's the mitzvah that the Rambam is discussing?
It seems like he's talking about Simchas Yom Tov.
Okay, does that exist on Shabbos?
No, because it's Shabbos.
Okay, but what is there on Shabbos?
So that's, I guess, where I would start. It's talking about Oneg and what was the other one? You know, one is, yeah. I mean, I what is it, Menucha and
We have Kavod and Oneg.
Kavod and
Oneg. On Shabbos, which is the having the place look nice, you take a shower, you wear nice clothes, and Oneg is enjoyment on Shabbos, having three meals. But it's not Simcha. So it's not idea of having a big, a communal joy and rejoicing. Certainly it's meritorious, but it's not the same thing. Here, what the Rambam is saying is that if a person's Simcha of Yontif is like what the American has on Thanksgiving, which is basically family and very close friends only, that's a simcha of the belly. That's not really honorable at all, because you're not including, there's no aspect of chesed involved, no act of tzedakah involved. Okay? So truly, the Rambam's idea, that what is a truly honorable Yom Tov meal and a truly simcha on it is that which is honorable in the fact that in of course your friends and your family's there and your friends are there, but also the people that wouldn't have that, the chesed dimension is woven in as well. You know what I'm saying? That's a revolutionary approach. It's completely foreign. That's why the Haggadah starts with an Aramaic statement that this is the bread of affliction, all those hungry come and eat, as a sort of as a reminder that this is the nature of this meal, as sort of the prototypical ideal Jewish meal of the year, the Hall of Fame meal of the year, is that it should include those who don't have. Now, a person can extend that not just to the Seder night, but to all Yom Tov meals, and then even Shabbos meals. Well, that's a lesson well taken. You know what I'm saying? Gonna scroll down here. Now, I'm going to segue to another question, which is a question that everybody always asks. Is, the question people say is like, you know, when do we eat? Or why can't we eat first and then read the Haggadah and discuss it later? Why is that? Why do we do Magid, the storytelling, before our meal?
Because everybody's tired and full and not paying attention after they eat all that good food.
So you're saying practically, if they wait till later, it won't get done.
Right. People will want to have a cup of coffee and go home, or they'll just not be as, involved in the conversation, or you know what I mean?
Right. So from a practical standpoint, what you're saying, Scott, is 100% correct. Now, there's another idea. That's one idea. There's another idea. Why does the host ding the glass before we all eat at a festive meal, you know, to make a toast, let's say. Why do they always do that? Like, they, all right, you know, either the father of the bride is going to speak or the best man's going to speak. Why do they do that at the beginning of the meal?
It gets people's attention.
Well, yeah, everybody quiets down. Yeah.
Well, why don't they do the thing at the end of the whole thing?
People might leave.
Paying attention.
Yeah.
So it's just, is it because practically, which you're going like, Scott, it's a practical consideration. We want to get people early on while the people are in their least distracted state. I think that's true, but I think there's another reason.
It raises the awareness of the act of eating to have one's mind on what the individual was toasting before the meal.
Correct. In other words, what you start the meal out when they call everybody's attention to make a toast, what the father of the bride or the best man is trying to do is identify what's the real simcha here, you know, and you can talk about how the couple met and how special each member of the couple is, you know what I'm saying? So it sort of identifies what in clear points, what are we really celebrating? You know what I'm saying? And to have the meal be organized based upon that celebration. So to hear, we're not just saying the Magid early so we can get it out of the way before people fall asleep. Also, there's a part of that which is true. But really, the identity of the meal is about celebrating or showing and learning about exploring the Exodus. So we should have gratitude to God on the Exodus. So that's really our main focus. So therefore it'll change the character of the eating because the eating now has what? A clear theme. You know what I'm saying? We do it first to give you an organizing principle for the meal. So let's start to identify all the features here. So at a Seder, you have people who are the family and the friends, and you might have some people there who otherwise would not either have a Seder or would have an inferior Seder, right? So that's the Chesed dimension. All those who are hungry come and eat. That's one dimension. And then we have a collective dialogue conversation with all the members of the family. So to the extent that you can. To talk about the various ideas of the night, to understand why this is an exalted evening, to understand why this isn't a night of passing on the tradition, the ideas about God's involvement from one generation to the other. And not just to pass it on, but to expand our understanding about that. Not just to see that this was a idea or ideas that occur or events that occurred 3,500 years ago, but rather what? That the ideas and the principles that the Jewish struggle and their salvation, those principles apply in contemporary times, in 2018, the same ideas. The Jewish people are prone to subjugation. The Jewish people are always dealing with the parous of our experience. And then there's a ghoul, there's a redemption. So with all these ideas mapped out, Then we don't start the meal. Do we just? What's the first thing that we eat after we finish the? First of all, we're gonna have a glass of wine first for the kiddush, toast number one. What are the glasses of wine for? Reflecting what idea?
Redemption.
Redemption, freedom, chayrut, freedom, redemption, both of them. So we manifest that we're free people by having this luxuriousness of drinking wine in a an aristocratic manner by reclining. And then what's the first thing that we eat of real substance, not the celery, but and we kick off the actual meal part. What do we have?
More.
Matzah.
We don't have matzah first. What do we have first?
Matzah.
We have matzah. The matzah that we've been talking about for the balance of the evening, which reflects the redemption we eat. Then we eat the mar that we've talked about. We've discussed that, the bitterness of the servitude, the bondage. We do the whole sandwich as a custom. Then we get into the meal. So you've done a bunch of the mitzvot. So really, it's the most reflective meal of the year. You don't have a meal where there's so much discussion and analysis, typically, built into the very structure and fabric of the meal. In a certain sense, it's a model of an ideal meal, where the food is subservient to an illuminating conversation. That really is the ideal. In other words, what's the ideal Jewish meal? Which has the following themes: insight, kindness, charity, creativity, gratitude. That's a meal. Now the Super Bowl of the year of this, of course, is a Seder. But if a person can borrow that idea, or you're not going to have a Seder, you know, but for a Shabbos meal and a Yontif meal to have substantive conversation and to include people that otherwise would not have a Yontif meal, that's really a mark of excellence. You know what I'm saying? And not just to sit around and schmooze about, you know, what's the best movie out to see. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying you can spend some time doing that, but if there's a meal of excellence is where there's going to be a breakthrough, a question, a discussion. All right? So you have all those things brought in: kindness, charity, insight, gratitude. You get that going on there. That's a meal of excellence. The verse says, in Pirkei Avot, we're talking about a meal of excellence. Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. This is the table which is before God. Well, that's a meal. In other words, Judaism is unique that we take something, a simple activity that we must do every day, which is eating, and we have a way to elevate that into a supremely human redemptive activity. And the model of all meals of the whole year is the Seder. And all the features, the foods, are really instrumental to all those elements. You know what I'm saying? It's kindness, because you brought people in who wouldn't have. It's discovery, discussion, insight, because you're having a symposium of, you're discussing that Haggadah, new questions, new issues are brought up, things further to explore, to research. And then, of course, ultimately, internally, reflecting on the big picture and feeling grateful that I'm a member of the Jewish people, it's been redeemed. Not only they were redeemed, I'm redeemed. So that is really, in a certain sense, the Seder ultimately is the model of the ultimate meal.
Rabbi, can I ask you a question about Passover and like Shabbat? Like, you know, somehow it floats around like during the week, depending on like, you know, the calendar.
Yes.
Is it any different because it's on Shabbos? Like, do you do anything like extra?
So that's an excellent question. The Seder is largely the same. It's just that, you know, there are certain things that there are certain restrictions that don't exist on Yom Tov. That, you know, for example, on Yom Tov, you can, in the middle of the
meal, all the food is
heat up the food. That you can't do. You have to have the food sort of like in a warmer situation being heat up starting before Shabbat. You know, that's the only thing. But the Seder neatly fits on top of this of Shabbat. You know what I'm saying? In Shabbat, and then you're laying on top of that the Pesach and the Seder. So you do everything the Seder. There are certain things that are some Shabbos restrictions that would not apply. Let's say the next night, which which will be the Saturday night Seder, which you have more freedom to. But the Haggadah is the same, even the matzah is the same, the maror is the same, it's the same.
There will be extra words or different words in the Kiddush.
A few extra words in the Kiddush to also mention the fact that not only is it Yontif, it's also Shabbos. We really, in other words, in a certain sense, there are two Kiddushas. There are two identities of holiness. There's the Shabbos holiness or the Shabbos identity superimposed, and then you have the Yom Tov holiness. The question is, do they merge into one different? Is it A plus B equals C, or is A and B, you know, together, lapped on together? Well, we mentioned the Kiddush. We mentioned both, you know, unique holiness or characters of the day. That's a basic. That's a good question, there, Scott.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. That is a good question. So, yeah, that's it. All right. Any questions about Pesach? Time is now.
Rabbi, I have a question.
That's you.
What do we do with, I know, like, so Saturday night, I don't think there would be Havdalah to mark the end of Shabbat. So what do we do this weekend in that regard?
So the Havdalah is woven into, when we make the Kiddush on the first cup of the second Seder, you're doing a combination platter. It's Kiddush and Havdalah. So the acrostic is Yaknahaz, which is Yayin, where you make the blessing over the wine. Kiddush, which is the Kiddush for the second night. Ner, you make the blessing on a candle, like a Havdalah candle. You can make it over the existing Yom Tov candles. Yayin, Kiddush, Ner. And then we make Havdalah. And then we make Shechianu. So it's, the abbreviation is Yaknahaz, Yayin, Kiddush, Ner, Havdalah, Zman. So the answer question is, we merge the Kiddush of the second day with Havdalah ending the first day into one big mega thing. And it's in everybody, it's in the Haggadah. So that's a good question. So it's a, then, so the answer question, it's a combo platter.
Then do we do anything Sunday night then to mark the end of Yontov?
Yeah, so when anytime Yontov is over, we don't have the elaborate Havdalah that you do for Shabbos. You just make two blessings, the Bari Priyat Gafen on a glass of wine, and then you make the Havdalah of Hamadil ben Koshachol ben Or Lachoshe ben Shalmin ben Yamashi Lashimase, Baruch Hashem Hamadil ben Koshachol. That's it. You end Yontif normally. You know, that's it. That's the, you don't have spices and you don't have the candle.
Okay. And then what about next week when Shabbat and Pesach end together? Do you do anything different with your Havdalah?
You'll do the Shabbos Havdalah, which is for both.
Okay.
And then if you're a good Jew, you try to get a slice of pizza as quickly as possible because you'll be in full-on chametz withdrawal. You had 8 complete days without fluffy bread. And they've actually used it as a gimmick to raise money. All, you know, many of the pizza stores will auction off who wants to buy the first pie, and the money will go to a charity of their, you know, a charity.
I've seen lines at places that serve kosher pizza, like lines.
Yes. Forget about it. I don't even try because they'll call in. People call, you know, and you're gonna get like they're doing now. The weird thing here is, Scott, if you watch carefully over the 8 days of Pesach, people are not eating a couple of calories. People tend to eat a full 25% more than they do for a regular yontif. Now, I have a theory, and I'm not sure I'm right, which is that the way that the Yom Tov, the Pesach, and you're having matzah and we're not having the normal bread and the normal, you know, the pasta and with all the normal stuff, puts a person in that sense of anxiety, you know. Anxiety. There's sort of there's anxiety. They get a food anxiety.
Yeah.
Compensate. They tend to eat more other food, more chocolate.
I don't think so.
So just watch others. If you walk into a kosher store, if you're on the Upper West Side, Seasons, wherever you are, you walk into a place and there's tons of food for Pesach. And if I asked a non-Jew, we're having this holiday called Passover. How many days do you think Passover is based upon the food options available? What do you think they'd say?
Well, look, if the guy doesn't know it's a Jewish holiday, he says it's very, very long. If he knows holiday, he says it's very short.
Right, so he would think that Passover is about, you know, 3 weeks long. based upon all the food supplies available there. So people, nobody tends to buy the exact precise amount of Pesach supplies for Pesach. There's always overbuying, which is quickly followed with overeating. And then, to prove my anxiety point, is Scott's point. So people come waddling out of 8 days of gut stuffing, you know, eating. So why are they waiting in line for an hour and 20 minutes to buy a pie of pizza? So there is literally a sense of deprivation. And what is the question people ask other observant Jews within the first day or so of Pesach? And listen carefully to the language. So what did you break your chametz, what chametz did you have? What was your first chametz? Like, it's like a break fast, like on Yom Kippur. Like, what did you eat first? Right? The post-Pesach breaking of the, what was your first chametz? Listen carefully. You're going to hear it. Did you go the bagel option? Did you go the pizza option? Now, the truth is that shows the power of how the mitzvah is designed. The mitzvah is designed not just to think about the Exodus, but to change over the entire cuisine to make that focus, make it front and center. If you want to get people's attention, you change their diet. It works.
I like the idea of bagel. You don't have to wait till lunch or dinner. Just go right for it.
Who doesn't like a bagel? Everybody likes a bagel. All right, guys. I want to wish each and every one a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, a wonderful, sweet Pesach. It should be a redemptive experience for each one, a holiday of insight.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Chag Sameach. I have another question.
Thank you.
So for Friday night with Kabbalat Shabbat and Mariv, just open my Siddur real quick. Why don't we say the regular Kabbalat Shabbat service?
Okay, so Kabbalat Shabbat was added to the Siddur in the 1700s. And when there's already a Yontif theme, together with Shabbos, it's not, I guess the idea is that to get people into the consciousness of, in a holiness state of mind is not as required. But if a person coming from a work week for a typical Shabbos, the mystics of Svat created this special service as an introductory to get people into the Shabbos zone. Here, you got Shabbos, you got Yontif mixed together. The idea is people also preparing for Pesach for a long time. There's an anticipation. People excited for at least the first Seder. Second Seder is the second question. People like burnt out, people say like, why do we have to have one? And I wish I was in Israel, whatever. But so the simple answer is it's not necessary.
Do Yadid Nefesh, we begin with Psalm 92.
You just say the song of the day of Shabbat. Just a transition for the weekday, and then you go right into the admirer. Correct.
There's, I have a competing hypothesis as to the 25% extra calories, and I think it has to do with the oversized shiurim of matzah and murray you have to eat for korech.
Korech. Mendel, you come to my seder. I'm going to tell you I have a variety of shiurim options. So I offer a lenient position if you want it, and you won't be stuck with the matzah.
Okay.
All right, guys. Have a great Yontif. All the best. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Yeah.